It's my great pleasure to come all the way from Brighton here to give this talk. I'm going to talk about spin lipid materials. It's the end of this program, and you have seen these materials many, many times in the program. So once again, we're going to investigate some properties of this spin lipid materials. So I will mention a couple of different works in this talk, and these works were done in collaboration with all these very brilliant physicists. So Fa Wang is now a professor in Peking University in China, and Yang Qi is a professor in Tsinghua University, and Andrew is our postdoc here, and everyone knows Leon and Matthew. And these three people, Xiang Tao, Zhang Guangming, and Zhao Huihai, are my collaborators in China. So I will start with a very, very brief introduction and also review of all the spin and half and spin one spin lipid materials. Since you have seen them in the program, I will be very brief about that. So these materials, actually, they have a very different structure and even different spin, but actually they have some very universal properties. And because they have universal properties, we will actually try to propose a universal theory for these universal properties. And I will just focus on a spin one material. This nickel-based spin 1 antiferromagnet on the triangular lattice, two-dimensional triangular lattice, and I will propose a theory for that. And I will focus on making experimental predictions based on our theory, and hopefully these predictions can be verified in future experiments. And then I'm going to propose almost the same theory for spin half spin liquid system on a triangular lattice, and it can be applied to these two famous spin liquid materials. Okay, so our goal is to study spin liquid. And a spin liquid, by definition, is a strong quantum fluctuation-driven phenomenon. So this means that if we want to look for spin liquid system, we should look for systems with very strong quantum fluctuation. So what kind of system has a strong quantum fluctuation? Well, the usual wisdom tells us that when a spin size is very small, the quantum fluctuation is stronger. So it means that if we want to look for spin liquid system, we had better start with a spin half system, which is the smallest spin system. Okay, so indeed, we have many examples of spin liquid states, in spin half system, discovered in the last few years, discovered both numerically and also experimentally, and we have heard many, many nice stories about all these systems in this program. Okay, so the usual wisdom tells us that a spin one system, because the size of spin is larger, the spin one system should have a much weaker quantum fluctuation compared to the spin half system. This means that this usual wisdom tells that a spin one system should have a much lower chance to have a spin liquid compared to the spin half system. For example, indeed in nature, most of the spin one materials are indeed ordered. For example, let me just remind you of one very famous spin 1 material is the nickel gallium sulfur. So this actually is a spin 1 material on the triangular lattice. So when people do standard neutron diffraction on it, they didn't really see any obvious peak in the brain zone. So this seems to suggest that the system is not ordered at all. The system has no spin order. However, the specific heat of this material has a very nice two-dimensional Goldstone behavior. So specific C is proportional with T squared at a very low temperature. So this is a very standard Goldstone mode behavior in two dimension. So this means that this system seems to have certain symmetry breaking, certain spin symmetry breaking. Then eventually, what happened in the system is that the system has a little bit special spin pneumatic order or a ferro quadrupolar order. So ferro quadrupolar order or spin pneumatic order is the order that breaks the spin rotation symmetry, but does not break any time reversal symmetry. So it does not directly couple to the neutron moment. Okay. So for example, on every side, we have a three states for spin 1. It's SZ equals to 1, 0, minus 1. But if I take SZ equals 0 everywhere on the triangular lattice, then this state breaks the spin rotation symmetry, but does not break time reversal. So this state will be a ferro quadrupolar state for spin 1. So it turns out this material very nicely realizes this state.
Excuse me? So is this pneumatic order experimentally established?
People believe so. You know, it has a Goldstone mode behavior and no magnetic moment seen by neutrons. So actually, you know, if you want to imagine some state, this is actually a very natural state to go with. So
that's really pretty evidence for this rotational symmetry breaking.
I'm not sure how to see that actually. You know, I'm not sure how to. I mean, so what is the best thing you can couple to the spin pneumatic order parameter and really show the spin pneumatic order parameter long run order there? So,
all right. There should be
lattice
distortion.
Why is that? Latitude, you mean the spin order latitude distortion?
Yeah.
But sure, but that should happen in any kind of order, right? Not just the spin pneumatic order, though.
Yeah, but that should.
Yeah, I mean, sure, yeah. So yeah, right. So this will give us some latitude distortion, of course. But the question is that how do we pin down this system? This is the order. There. So I, you know.
A question, just adding this maybe distraction, but is it possible to couple it to a magnetic field at quadratic order?
Sure, that's very small. Right? That's gonna be.
But I don't know whether has anyone tried looking into those small.
No, I don't think so. No. Experiment is going to be very.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, so I mentioned there's a usual wisdom or intuition that the spin 1 system should have a much weaker quantum fluctuation than spin 1 half system. However, this intuition only works for the Heisenberg model. If we go beyond the Heisenberg model, actually the spin 1 system actually can have an even stronger quantum fluctuation than spin 1 half system. For example, let me just talk about this model. This is the spin 1 model and it can be defined on any lattice. It contains two terms, a quadratic term and a biquadratic term. And then there's a coefficient theta, a cosine theta, sine theta, which tunes the ratio between quadratic and biquadratic terms. So it turns out when I tune theta to pi over 4, when the coefficient of these two terms are identical, turns out this model has a larger symmetry, has a SU3 symmetry. The reason is very simple, because for a spin 1 system, every side has three states. Okay, so for a three-state system, the maximal symmetry is SU3. So it turns out when theta is pi over 4, this model has precisely the SU3 symmetry. Okay, and we also know that for a spin system, when the symmetry is higher, the quantum fluctuation is also higher. So higher symmetry actually means higher quantum fluctuation. So how do you understand this? We can consider a spin order state. We know that for a spin order state, when the symmetry is higher, the number of Goldstone modes is increased. Okay, and when the number of Goldstone modes is larger, the zero-point quantum fluctuation is stronger. So this means that indeed, when the symmetry of the system is higher, the quantum fluctuation is stronger. So this means that when I fine-tune the Hamiltonian to the SU3 point, the quantum fluctuation will be even stronger than a spin half system. Okay, so indeed, this actually was confirmed by some numerical calculation for this model on the honeycomb lattice. So this was done by my collaborators in China. It's a very nice numerical calculation. So they put this model on the honeycomb lattice and study both the classical phase diagram and the quantum phase diagram. So the inner circle is a classical phase diagram. I think it's obtained by some kind of semi-classical SU3 Shingle boson mean field theory. And in the classical phase diagram, this model everywhere is perfectly ordered. There's a standard ferromagnetic order. There's a standard anti-ferromagnetic nail order. There's a ferro-quadrupolar order, which is the ground state of the nickel, gallium, sulfur. And also there's anti-ferro-quadrupolar order. Okay, it's all ordered. But once we turn on quantum fluctuation, when my collaborator did a full quantum tensor RG calculation, turns out that the quantum fluctuation completely erased this classical order. This anti-ferro-quadrupolar order parameter completely erased. Instead, the quantum fluctuation replaced this anti-ferro-quadrupolar order with a plaquette order. The plaquette order means that the six spins around the hexagon will form a singlet, and a singlet formation will spontaneously break the translation and the rotation symmetry of the lattice. So this model is a quantum limit order. This order is a quantum limit order. It's not really a spin liquid because it breaks translation symmetry, but still, it's not a semi-classical order at all. Okay? And in this phase, it's very close to the SU3 point here. So this means that close to the SU3 point, the spin 1 system can also have a very, very strong quantum fluctuation and can completely erase the semi-classical spin order state. Okay, so these are numerical work. So let me come back to the materials. So far we have seen many spin liquid materials, in this talk I'm going to focus on the triangular lattice spin liquid material. So these are the spin and a half materials. I mean, this one has some controversy about structure, but these two are very unambiguously triangular lattice structure, and this is triangular lattice spin 1 material discovered last year. Okay, so these materials have different structure and different spin, but they have some universal phenomena. For example, first of all, the gamma equals to C over T will saturate to a constant at zero temperature. And also the spin susceptibility chi will saturate to a constant at zero temperature as well. Okay, so these two are the two major phenomena which are mentioned very, very often in the program. However, there's a third phenomenon which I think is also very important but it's not mentioned very often, is that for all these materials, if you look at the finite temperature, there's no obvious phase transition for them at a finite temperature. If you raise them, there's no obvious phase transition. There's some crossover, some hump or something, but there's no obvious phase transition. What kind of phase transition is that?
Well, in the thermal expansion, measure very sharp.
Okay, but in terms of heat, there's no.
There's a hump.
Yeah, but it's some sort of crossover hump or something, but it's not. Okay, I mean, okay, so yeah, there's some way to. But okay, so I'm saying that, suppose the ground state have a certain symmetry breaking, let's say, then at a finite temperature, there should be a very clear phase transition. Yeah. So here, I think this means that the ground state of the spin system has no symmetry breaking at all. Here, by symmetry breaking, I don't just mean spin rotation symmetry breaking, I also mean all the discrete symmetry, like a time inversal, reflection, rotation, anything. Okay? So I'm trying to say that most likely the ground state of all these materials have no symmetry breaking at all. No spin symmetry breaking, no time inversal, no reflection symmetry breaking, all this symmetry. Okay, so our goal is to propose a theory which is consistent with all the universal phenomena observed experimentally. Okay, so yeah, but there are some fundamental difficulty to understand these phenomena. So first of all, in two dimension, we can almost never solve any quantum spin model exactly. And second, in this material, we don't really know the spin model at all. Okay, we don't really know the spin model at all. So these are some fundamental difficulties that prevent us from understanding these materials. So it means that we do not have enough information to construct a microscopic theory for these materials. However, we do have information to do some phenomenological theory. And there is a standard procedure for us to construct a phenomenological theory for the spin liquid material. It goes like this. So first of all, we have to construct a spin wave function. It can be constructed using a slate fermion construction or Hawthorne construction, and we consider the spin wave function as a ground state of a reasonable realistic spin model. And second, we have to consider dynamics on top of the ground state we just mentioned. And we have to take into account of the gauge fluctuation as much as we can. Here, by as much as we can, I mean that we do not always know precisely what the gauge field will do in the system, but we have to do our best to have an estimate. And third, the most important part is that we should make a lot of experimental predictions and wait for experimentalists to confirm these predictions, either prove they're wrong or prove they're right. Okay, so this is a procedure I will try to take in this talk. Okay. Okay, so let me focus on the spin one material from now on. Let me focus on spin one material because it's a bit more complicated. So let me focus on spin one material. So before I try to understand the exotic spin liquid behavior, let me try to think about what kind of standard order state can a spin one system have on the triangular lattice. What kind of standard order state can there be for spin one system on a triangular lattice? Of course, all the triangular lattice spin one system can have a 120 degree spiral order, which looks like this, okay, very standard spiral order on a triangular lattice. It can happen for any kind of a spin system on a triangular lattice. And the second very standard spin order is the ferro quadrupolar order, which I mentioned just now, which actually is a ground state for the nickel gallium sulfur. Okay, and the third order, which I will mention, is the spatial pneumatic order. The spatial pneumatic means that it spontaneously breaks the rotation symmetry of the lattice. It means the spins form some spontaneous stronger correlation along the x direction, but not along the other two directions. So it spontaneously breaks the rotation symmetry of the triangular lattice. Okay. In other words, we can also view this order as some kind of spontaneous Hodan phase along the x direction, but not along the other two directions. So this actually is not really a semi-classical spin order, but it breaks down symmetry, so we can also call it an order state on a triangular lattice. So my goal is that I should propose a spin liquid state which is consistent with all the experiments. And also, I want to show that the spin liquids I'm going to propose, although it's stable, it's very close to the three standard order state on a triangular ladder for spin 1. Okay? So this means that my spin liquid state is a consequence of the competition of this kind of three order state. So the system wants to form the order state of the type of ABC, but eventually, because they're competing, the system make a compromise and go to my spin liquid state. Okay, this is the goal I want to achieve. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So let me look at these two phenomena. So finite gamma and finite chi, they really suggest that the system has a spin on Fermi surface in the system, because when there's a Fermi surface, the both gamma and chi will be a finite constant and proportional with the density of states at the Fermi surface. Okay. However, this picture is only valid at the mean field level, which means we ignore the gauge fluctuation. However, the system, the spin on Fermi surface, is almost always coupled to a very evil U1 gauge field, which will destroy everything at low energy. So once the evil U1 gauge field is coupled to an even more evil Fermi surface, actually after integrating out the Fermi surface, the U1 gauge field, the photon, will acquire a very soft, overdamped mode. So the mode will look like this. It has a very soft omega to q to cube dispersion. And then this dispersion, because very soft, will give us a very, very strong specific heat at low energy. So the maximum scale with t to 2/3. So this actually will dominate the linear t behavior of the specific heat. Okay, so this raised some concern for me, but of course, so in the program we also heard that once we subtract the Schottky anomaly in a different way, actually the data may also fit this the scaling. But let me just assume that it's still linear in my talk. So. So certainly we can try to kill the U1 gauge field by condensing some Cooper pair. If we try to condense some Cooper pair, then it's difficult to keep the finite density of states at the Fermi surface, because all the ordinary pairing, like the S-wave, D-wave pairing, they not only kill the U1 gauge field, they also kill long density of states. And S-wave pairing will completely gap out entire Fermi surface, and D-wave pairing will give us some kind of nodal point, nodal quasi particle. So it means that it's not so easy to kill the U1 gauge field while preserving the finite density of states at the Fermi surface. So certainly we can turn on some disorder on the D-wave pairing state. Once we have D-wave pairing state, we can turn on some finite disorder. The impurity scattering will give the system some finite density of state, but that will need some fair amount of disorder to do this. Okay. So the spin-1 system has a very similar problem. For example, what people usually do about the spin-1 system is that we can represent the spin-1 operator in terms of a triplon slave fermion, like this. Okay. So F carries a spin-1 representation of the SC2 group, and also we have to turn on something in order to make sure the spin Hilbert space and the fermion Hilbert space are identical. We have to turn on some constraint, and this is a constraint, we have one particle per side constraint. Okay. Then by doing this, we can very easily get a spin-down Fermi surface plus a U1 gauge field state. So this kind of formalism is very useful. It's proved to be very useful in one dimension. For example, in one dimension, the formalism can give us the SU3 level 1 conformal field theory, which is known to be the ground state of one phase of the spin-1 chain in one dimension. But in two dimensions, we can also very easily get a spin-out Fermi supply U1 gauge field. But then actually, the U1 gauge field, we have very soft overdamped mode, which has to give us a lot of specific heat at low energy. Okay, so for spin-1 system, when we use a triplon slave fermion, we can try to kill the U1 gauge field fluctuation while preserving the finite density space at the Fermi surface. But in order to do that, we have to condense the spin triplet Cooper pair of the spin-down F. Okay. So once I condense the spin triplet Cooper pair, it means that the ground state must necessarily break the spin SU2 rotation symmetry. So this means that if I start with the SU2 invariant model, then this state will not be a spin liquid because it breaks the spin rotation symmetry. However, if I start with the spin model without the SU2 spin rotation symmetry, then this state can still be viewed as a spin liquid state. Okay. So this is the approach taken by this paper. But in this talk, let me just try to focus on the SU2 invariant models in this talk. Okay, so let me try to take a different formula then. I still represent C1 operator in terms of slave fermion, but I will do it in a different way. Let me represent the C1 operator in terms of the C1 half slave fermion, but the slave fermion here will carry two index. One is a C1 half index, the other is a two orbital index. So alpha is a C1 half index, A is the orbital index. And again, in order to make sure the spin Hilbert space and the fermion Hilbert space are identical, I have to turn on some constraint, have to impose some constraints on the fermion Hilbert space. So I have to turn on two constraints. The first constraint is that on every side, there are two and precisely two fermions on every side. And the second constraint is that on every side, the orbital space is total anti-symmetric. If I make sure the orbital space is total anti-symmetric, it means that the spin space is total symmetric. So in this way, I guarantee on every side I have a precisely spin 1 representation of the SU2 spin group. Okay? So just like the ordinary slave fermion, so these two local constraints will give us some gauge degree freedom. We'll get some gauge symmetry. So what kind of gauge symmetry are there? Well, it turns out that the gauge symmetry here is very, very large. The gauge symmetry is like the SP4 or SO5. They are kind of equivalent. So how do I see the SO5 gauge symmetry in this formalism? Well, so now my slave fermion has a spin half index and also orbital index. So in total, I have four components of complex fermion. So four components of complex fermion is equivalent to eight components of real Majorana fermion. So the entire transformation on the 8 Majorana fermion is SO8. The entire transformation on Majorana is SO8. And the spin SO3 symmetry is a subgroup of the SO8. So in order to identify the gauge group, we just have to find the maximal subgroup of SO8 that commute with the spin SO3 symmetry. So it turns out that the maximal symmetry, the maximal subgroup of SO8 that commute with SO3 is SO5. Okay, that's how we found SO5, a gauge degree freedom in the formalism. Okay, so this formula then can be generalized to arbitrary spin system. For example, for spin S system, this kind of formula then will give us the SP4S gauge symmetry. For example, when S equals to 1/2, then this formula then gives me SP2 gauge symmetry, which is the SU2 gauge symmetry. This actually is a very well known SU2 gauge formula then for the spin half system. For larger spin, the gauge symmetry will be larger and larger. Okay, so what can we do with the formalism? Or in other words, what kind of a spin state can we construct using this kind of slave fermion formalism? So we have to test it in one dimension first. Okay? Turns out in one dimension, this formalism can give us very easily give us the Hodan phase of the spin 1 chain. Or the SU2 level 2 conformal field theory. So both states are some well-known state of the spin 1 chain. For example, how do we get the Hodan phase? It's very easy. I have two orbitals here for the slave fermion. I can take orbital 1 to fill a valence bound mean field state on the blue links, and orbital 2 to fill a valence bound mean field state on the red links. Because there's no physical difference between orbital 1 and 2, eventually the wave function of the spin will be translationally invariant. So this state actually corresponds to the Hodan phase. The reason is very simple. If I cut the state here, if I cut the boundary here, this valence bound here will give us a zero mode of the slave fermion. And the zero mode of slave fermion corresponds to the spin 1/2 x state of the Hodan phase. So this means that this state corresponds to the Hodan phase. And it can also, this formula can also give us SU2 level 2 conformal field theory, which also is a very well-known state of the spin 1 chain. In higher dimension, this state can give us all kinds of SPT. For example, in two dimension, this formula can give us the SPT with SO3 times time inversal symmetry. And in three dimension or higher, the formula can give us the SPT with higher spin symmetry. So there's something else we can do with this formula. Okay, so now let me try to apply this formula to our spin 1 system on a triangular lattice. Okay? So the procedure goes like this. So our goal is to construct a spin wave function. So first we take a spin down fermion wave function, and then we can do the two projections on a spin down fermion wave function. So we take a spin down wave function and we project it down to two particles per side and also color or orbital symmetry on every side. So after this projection, the fermion wave function will become a spin wave function. This is what we can do with it. Okay. So now we can favor standard bilinear or quadratic spin Hamiltonian Heisenberg model on a triangular lattice, and we can rewrite it in terms of the slave fermion and become a full fermion term, and we can do the kind of standard mean field decomposition and make it a two-body mean field band structure for the slave fermion. Okay. Of course, there are many, many different mean fields that we can consider, but our goal is to try to understand the material. So this means that we can choose some mean field state to consider. So the mean field state I will study, which is going to be consistent with experiment, is a D plus ID pairing between these slave fermions. And I want to emphasize that here, the mean field parameter only has a D plus ID pairing term, but has no hopping term. Okay, it's only pairing, but no hopping. Okay, I'll explain why I want to consider this in the next slide. So if I take the mean field Hamiltonian and I expand it as the gamma point of the Brayton zone, it will look like this. Okay, it will look like this. So gamma is some kind of 4x4 gamma matrix. Okay, so what is the basic property of this state that I chose to study? So first of all, if I expand the deep ID pairing state in the gamma point, it will give us a quadratic band touching. It has a quadratic band touching at the gamma point in the triangularized Brayton zone. So we know that in two dimensions, a quadratic band touching has a finite constant density of states. Two dimensions, just like from the surface. So this finite density state will give me finite gamma and a finite chi at low energy. Okay. So at least at the mean field level, this state will be consistent with the experimental data. And second, this state is a D-wave pairing in the real space. So in the spin channel, it's a spin singlet pairing. It's a spin singlet. So it means that the ground state for this spin system is a SU2 spin singlet. It does not break any SU2 spin rotation symmetry. And third, this actually does not break any other discrete symmetry either. For example, there's no time reversal symmetry breaking. Okay. This may sound a little bit surprising, because under time reversal, D plus ID seems to go to D minus ID. So it seems like this state breaks time reversal symmetry. However, when we do D plus ID go to D minus ID, this sign changing can be compensated by a gauge transformation. So we can do a gauge transformation to kill this sign changing. So this means that this state eventually does not break any physical time reversal symmetry. Okay? So this is consistent with the fact that there's no phase transition at a finite temperature. And also, we can check all the transformation, like reflection, rotation, this state is always invariant on all the kind of transformation. So it means there's no phase transition at finite temperature.
Sorry, just a short question. Is it easy to understand how the quadratic band touching occurs in this case? You just have to expand the delta around the gamma point and see that it becomes quadratic around the gamma. So it's
right.
More straightforward.
Right. Yeah. And also, the quadratic band touching is protected by the rotation symmetry of triangle lattice. We have a bilinear graphene. Looks like the quadratic band touching, but if you go in the zoom in the gamma point and zoom in the corner of Brayton zone, it's going to be split into certain dry fermion. It means that to protect the quadratic band touching, we need at least Z4 symmetry. So triangle has Z6, so it means that it's going to be okay.
Also, in bilayer graphene, it's known to lead to spontaneous symmetry breaking just because you have this finite density states. So wouldn't you expect the same instability here? Isn't it?
That depends on the sign of impaction. I will mention that. Yeah, don't worry, I'll mention that.
So,
okay. I still don't understand this. So if I think of a D plus ID superconductor, right, so you wouldn't say that there's some density of states left at the low energy. What's
that? Because of hopping.
Okay, and what was again the reason why you didn't include any hopping?
Because the hopping, okay. So if I have both hopping and D-ID pairing in my mean field band structure for spin up, then this state will break time reversal. So without hopping, with only D-ID pairing.
Of course, when nothing hops, then nothing can. I mean, if on the time reversal, if you don't have any hopping, I mean, you wouldn't be able to invert any current or whatever. I mean, of course, then your state is time reversal symmetric as soon as you don't have hopping. That's what you're saying, right?
It may be more subtle than that, actually. Actually, you know, mathematically, you can prove there's no time reversal symmetry breaking without a hopping. So I'll try to say that the hopping term is forbidden by time reversal symmetry. Right? That's why I don't consider that. Okay? So once you have a hopping and also D pairing, the system will break time reversal. So so the system, there's no term you can turn on which is consistent with time reversal symmetry and also linearly coupled with the hopping. There's no term you can turn on like that.
Is it necessary to consider a pairing only thing, or could you make some gauge transformation to make this a hopping?
Oh, sure, so you can make it a hopping, yeah, precisely. You know, I mean, the pairing is just a, choose one gate to become pairing. You could choose some other gate to become a hopping term, definitely. But, you know, it looks prettier in the pairing channel.
Okay. And why is D plus ID energetically the lowest state then?
I haven't talked about energy yet. Certainly, we don't know the model yet, right? I'm going to write down a model which kind of prefers this state later.
Okay.
I'm going to write down a model. Okay, so these three items here shows that at the mean field level, this state is okay. It has a consistent with all the major experiments, finite gamma, finite high, no phase transient temperature, finite temperature. But what about gauge fluctuation? That's like the evil thing we should consider. So as I mentioned before, my slave Fermi construction has a very large gauge symmetry, the SO5 gauge symmetry. However, of course, the gauge symmetry will be broken down to smaller gauge symmetry by the mean field state I'm considering. So it turns out that for the mean field state I'm considering, the gauge fluctuation will be either Z4 or U1 cross Z2, depending on some details of the construction of the mean field state. Suppose the gauge symmetry is Z4, then it's very not harmless because it's fully gapped, so it doesn't do anything, doesn't change anything at a low energy for my spin state. And if the U1 cross Z2, then there's a gapping photon there in the system. But actually for the quadratic band touching case, if you do naive power counting, the gauge field coupling is marginal. And if you do loop correction, it suggests that the U1 gauge field is marginally irrelevant. So it means that even if there's a U1 gauge field, it's not going to do much bad thing to the state I'm considering. So a gauge field is pretty much harmless in the state I'm trying to discuss here. So still, so all the problems here will survive gauge fluctuation. So, yeah. Okay, so what else can we calculate with this state? We can calculate the spin structure factor, the spin-spin correlation, and see how it behaves at the momentum space. So the simple calculation tells us that spin structure factor, we have a very soft power law peak at the corner of the Brillouin zone. A very soft power law peak at the corner of the Brillouin zone. So this means that this spin liquid state is very close to the standard 120 degree state on a triangular lattice, because this side we have the delta function peak at the corner of the Brillouin zone. So my state will be very close to this spin state. Okay. So this is very different from a spin-down Fermi surface state, because if I take a spin-down Fermi surface state and I try to calculate the spin structure factor, it will have peak at a 2kF, but not necessarily have peak at the corner of Brillouin zone. Okay. So that's a very big difference from spin-down Fermi surface, which can be tested in future experiments if one day one can do neutron scattering on these materials. And also, we can try to calculate the correlation between the federal quadrupolar order parameter, and still the federal quadrupolar order parameter has a power law correlation in my state as well. So this means that my spin liquid state is also close to the federal quadrupolar state on a triangular lattice. So this means that the two materials, the nickel, gallium, sulfur, and the spin one spin liquid material, although it seems like the grounds are different, they're actually very close to each other. They're very close to each other. Nickel, gallium, sulfur has the federal quadrupolar state actually is close to the spin liquid state discussing here.
Excuse me, is this closeness of structure factor enough to conclude that they are close? So I mean, if the structure correlations are similar,
that's my definition.
Your definition of closeness.
Yes, my definition for close.
Okay. So it's not like close in a sense, energy sense. Like,
no, that's my definition for close.
Would
almost every
quantity
have a power law dispersion? No, not necessarily. Yeah, no, I mean, for example, you can choose some other spin pattern that won't have a power law correlation anymore. Right. And choose some other spin pattern. Choose any pattern you want. With certain wave vector, it won't happen. Yeah. Yeah. The same thing happens for the spatial pneumatic order. I can try to calculate correlation with spatial pneumatic order, so also it's going to be a power law. Okay. So this means that the spin liquid state I discussed can be viewed as a parent state or the mother state of all this. Spin order state. Okay, so we can say that spin liquid that I discussed here can be viewed as a quantum melted order state. You can start with this kind of order state and try to find a common spin liquid state after melting them, and this is the spin liquid state actually come out after we melt all these states by quantum fluctuation. Yeah. Okay. I have to go a little bit faster. Okay, what else can we try to compute? We can try to compute some transport properties. Of course, the Fermi spin down does not carry any charge, So we cannot have any a charge conductivity, but still it can have some thermal conductivity. So we can try to calculate the thermal conductivity. So it turns out that the Kubo formula will give us a thermal conductivity in the proportion with temperature, the linear with temperature. And actually, it's a Wiedemann-Frenz law tells that for a fermion system, suppose the fermion is a real electron, then the thermal conductivity is proportional with the electrical conductivity times the temperature. Okay. So now we can compare the quadratic band touching with graphene, with a 2D Dirac fermion. Okay. For graphene, we know the graphene has a zero density state and also a constant finite velocity at a low energy. The quadratic band touching has a finite density state and a zero velocity at a low energy. So it turns out that these two properties actually will compensate each other. So eventually, if I just take a clean limit and a non-intact limit, then actually the quadratic band touching in two dimensions almost has a very similar transport coefficient, compared with the graphene. Okay. However, this number will not be universal for the quadratic band touching. The reason is that there's always a marginal local interaction between the fermion, which actually can change the number of the electrical conductivity here. Okay, we can also think about a thermal Hall effect. So thermal Hall effect goes like this. In a two-dimensional system, you can turn on the field along Z direction and turn on the temperature gradient along Y direction and try to measure if there's any heat current flowing along the X direction. So Patrick has done some very nice work and showed that the spin-down Fermi surface state will have a non-zero thermal Hall effect, even though the spin-down carries no charge at all. So this is a very, very nice prediction. Now the reason is that the external magnetic field will couple linearly with the internal U1 gate field flux. And because the internal U1 gate field flux is turned on, it will induce a non-zero thermal Hall effect for the spin loss. Okay, but in our state, at least for the Z4 state, because the gauge field is fully gapped, the external field will not turn on any gate flux in our system. So this means that we do not see any obvious thermal Hall effect in our system. So this is also a very big difference between the spin-down Fermi surface state and also this kind of quadratic band touching state I'm trying to describe here. Okay, so far I have talked about spin 1 system. We can also try to discuss the same state for the spin half system. So it turns out we can construct almost the same state for spin half system. So it's still a DPID state, DPID pairing state between the spin half state fermions. And also this state will be consistent with all the major universal external phenomena of these two spin half material, and finite gamma, finite chi at zero temperature, and also no thermal Hall conductivity. And this state is close to the standard 100 degree state on the triangular lattice, and also close to spatial pneumatic state, close to chiral spin liquid, and many other order state on the triangular lattice. Yeah. Okay, well, so far everything is very phenomenological. Let me do a little bit of microscopic things here. Okay, so let me try to write down a spin Hamiltonian, actually whose ground state has a good chance to be the spin liquid I'm trying to describe here. So let me do spin half here. So the way we derive the spin Hamiltonian is by starting with a band structure, the main field band structure, and turning on the interaction, and we can see when the U is very, very large, it imposes the on-site constraint on our spin system. But instead of tuning U to infinite large, we can do a perturbation theory of delta over U, kind of perturbation theory. So when we do delta over U perturbation, as a fourth order, this is the Hamiltonian we get, spin Hamiltonian we get as a fourth order. Of course, this is going to be our nearest neighbor, Heisenberg coupling, and a second neighbor and third neighbor, and also this is going to be a ring chain term.
When you introduce U, how should I use this U in terms of the usual operators, not treating as this F operator, but if I want to transfer?
U is always there.
You're just saying that's the same on-site Hubbert for...
U will always be there. Because
if I'm going towards this Slade-Fermin representation.
U will always be there for the slave fermion because there's a constraint, right? There's always a constraint.
Okay,
so slave fermion is not a weakly intacting fermion, right? It's a strongly intacting fermion because of both the gauge field and also local constraint, right? It's always going to be okay. Okay, yeah, so this model we can derive by doing this. So one thing I want to point out is that this ring chain term has a negative coefficient. So it's different from all the other ring chain term people discussed before, because Lessig has done some very nice version of Monte Carlo on a spin model with a ring chain, but that ring chain has a positive sign. So here I'm trying to say that with a negative ring chain, this model actually may favor my my spin sequence state that I just described. And one can check this by doing version of Monte Carlo. And another thing we can try to do is that we can take the spin Hamiltonian in our previous slide and do a series expansion on it and then try to calculate the susceptibility curve, probably with the temperature, and try to compare that with the experimental observer data. So this is experimental data here. So we can take my spin Hamiltonian and do a high temperature expansion and try to match this curve and see whether the model is a reasonable description of the DMIT material or not. Okay? So that's something one can, in principle, do in the future. So there's some concerns, of course. Because the quadratic band charging has a very, very soft dispersion, so in terms of at very low energy, the interaction can be important. Okay. Turns out that if you have local interaction, we can do power counting, the local interaction will be marginal. But whether it's marginally relevant or irrelevant, depending on the sign of the interaction. Okay. And for different systems, we can imagine have different signs. So actually, there's no universal way to determine whether the full Fermi and local interaction is relevant or irrelevant. Okay. But actually, suppose it's relevant and it's marginally relevant, it's going to open up a very small gap because of marginally relevant. And I try to say that this marginally relevant full Fermi interaction might be consistent with a very, very small gap observed in the kappa ET material in the thermokinetic measurement. Okay. But this is something I'm not certain. So it requires some further study here. Okay. But the full Fermi term actually is a concern for the state. But it's marginal, so it's not going to be that bad. Okay, I guess this is all I want to talk about. So summary, well, we propose a universal spin equilibrium state, try to make it match with all the spin one and spin half spin equilibrium material triangular lattice, and it's consistent with all these properties here. So thank you for your attention.
And when you showed the microscopic elaboration on your spin model, you had the delta term and the U term. So in from a physical perspective, if I compare the D plus LD in the D solution, okay? And you're saying that D plus LD, of course, leaves a lot of density of states unspoiled. So it loses a lot of condensation energy as compared to the D wave state. Or why isn't that?
Or same thing you can say for a spin out from the surface, right? I mean, why spin out from the surface good candidate state for the candle there?
Oh, but so in your mean field answer, so if you can you explain again where is the condensation energy? So if you take D wave candidate instead of the D plus ID candidate, what comes out?
No, I mean the D plus ID is just a one representation of one gate. If we choose another gate, it's purely hopping, right? Just purely hopping term, this is no pairing at all. So whether you write a D plus ID pairing or hopping, it's just purely gauge dependent. Right. So whether it's energetically with a favor or not is really an energetic problem. You can just do some Monte Carlo on that, right? So I mean, but so you would say that okay, maybe everything, all the spin models should favor some kind of spin gap state. But this is not the conclusion people have drawn for version Monte Carlo or different kind of spin model, right? People have done numerical calculation or all kind of spin model, and they show that some gap spin can show up, can be favored by the spin model. Right? So.
I guess I'm a bit confused. So if you can just turn it into a pure hopping model, how do you get a Z2 spin liquid?
Z2 spin liquid? Sure. Yeah, this is a pure hopping model. And Z2 because you have tau X here, tau Y here. Actually, the gauge flux, you could count the gauge flux on every triangle. You can see Z2 is the only thing left.
I'm just trying to imagine writing down a spin-on hopping model that doesn't have a U on gauge redundancy.
Yeah, it's very easy to do that, actually. Right. On the triangle lattice, it's possible. On the triangle lattice, actually, you have some triangle. Right? If I make the hopping along x direction tau x, along this link tau y, the other link tau v, then it's going to be your.
So just hybridizing by hopping.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what you need to say.
Can one actually see when you look at your spin-on dispersion that this momentum transfer Q, the cone of turbulence, so that this is soft? Is that something you can read off from this dispersion? Can you read off from your spin-on dispersion that modes which correspond to the K point, like your three sublattice magnetic order seems to be algebraic? Yeah. Is that something you can read off from your spin-on dispersion?
Yes, so this is a dispersion. In the Brillouin zone, right? So in addition to the quadratic band charging at the gamma point, there are some Dirac fermions. at the corner of the zone. So you can see, so this is a wave vector which corresponds to that maximum of that spin shock factor. Right. But the Dirac fermion actually doesn't really do much for the thermal length at low energy because it has a, you know, zero density state compared with the band touch. So, yeah, so you want to see that.
Thank you.